fascinating, fascinating debate and discussion on the first slide. I know that everybody is starting to starve a bit, but we still have three quarters left to discuss, maybe more link in relation to the Muse project. We presented the first day. You know, this seminar is taking part within this research project, and one of the questions we raised at the beginning was, how is it possible to build or to ground a sensory critique of the urban contemporary fabric? But one of the other questions, it could be a starting question, and what one of the questions we have today, and we tried to raise maybe yesterday while doing the sound walks and the different experiments, could be also, how is it possible to exhibit or communicate or represent or maybe translate atmospheres, ambiances. And while you had this discussion earlier in the morning, one of the questions which was raised was about the question of method. I think Derek brought it. You say that, finally, how methodologically is it possible in terms of human or social sciences to address the question of affect? And I was thinking about these notebooks you all. There is one missing. I was thinking of.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay. I was thinking about.
No, please.
You can ask me for it.
No, it was a gift for the observers. But one of the questions we asked you in the tape was to note what was going on, as if you were playing the role of an observer, of a guard, safety guard. And when you address this question of how can we investigate affects, I was just wondering, but if the question was, how do you feel right now? What could you note? So maybe it could be a starter for an open discussion. How did you feel while you did this experiment, or while you did the work? And as I didn't myself experience it, I couldn't answer right now. So. Yeah?
I felt I was in a boring movie. Uh-huh. That was my first impression. Having directions and instructions seems very technical, very precise, and that was my first, perhaps, invitation to observe, because, you know, you're trying to locate things that are meant to protect you, but at the same time they are intruding in your way, so that was interesting in that way. And the sense of action, I couldn't just wait there, I had to move on, and sometimes faster than I could, so again, there was a rhythm attached to it, so that was very interesting in that aspect as well. And also we had a plan, so it looked a bit, you know, mysterious to understand exactly what was the meaning of that as well. So there was something, you know, an intrigue, why are we doing that? So again, a mystery or a little drama in my life yesterday, a thrill.
I think there was an aspect of role play in it, which made me think that my attention had been apparently directed I liked following the instructions. I found that very satisfying, frankly. So when there's a kind of free, you know, the dialogue box, I felt as if I was, because I was on a higher plane, I felt as if I was, on the one hand, observing a lot of ebb and flow, a lot of stasis and movement, and also, as I said earlier, a lack of exchange, actually. I was aware of how homogenous in some ways the people below were. But I found I was looking for, I was looking for, as I said before earlier, about suspicious behavior. How do I categorize what is worthy of attention, what is suspicious, which is something that we're called, you know, the announcements are called for us to do. So I was, in some senses, I felt looking down in judgment on looking out for And as I said, when I saw that something which seemed transgressive, which was a little child walking in a, you know, kind of threatening way, and then the policeman, the London Metropolitan Policeman, actually bent down and started walking, mirroring alongside, and that made my day. And that was sort of a moment where I thought, that's something, that's an encounter that I didn't expect to see. And so from being in that kind of, I'm in a role, I am being a camera, that moment of looking at attention was very interesting. But it definitely, I felt as if I was being asked to occupy a position.
I thought that maybe my way of working could look suspicious. And maybe for all of us, doing the same thing and following each other, watching the cameras, writing down. I thought maybe in the CCTV I would be suspicious.
I felt very guilty. And I don't necessarily have a good relationship with the police, but I felt that they were watching me, and that what I was doing was exacerbating my normal behaviour, and it made it more suspicious, because I was maybe looking around and stopping, and I wasn't moving with the flow and things. And then when you asked us to be in the role of the... what did you call it? The camera. I was very irritated. I said, I don't want to do this. How dare I? How dare you ask me to do that? It's ridiculous. I'm not going to do it. And I wanted to write very big and tear the book up. Had a very strong reaction.
The missing book.
And then I looked and I thought, okay, I better do it because I better, not go again. I should do it because, I've been asked to do it. It's an invitation. So I started looking at people and thinking, well, that could be suspicious. I was very negative, and it was quite nice in a way. I thought, well, you could be suspicious. Everybody could be suspicious.
But what if the question was act as a risk analyst instead of act as a security guard?
Yeah, that would be very different. Again, it's in my head, the connotation of that. Because I could imagine if you are looking at the televisions, you're looking for an interruption in a rhythm or something, maybe. Mm-hmm. That would stop you from going to sleep, maybe. Yeah, it's true.
Not exactly the same, but when I first started watching, my first reaction was there's not much suspicious. There's some people eating lunch. There's, some people standing. But then I'm asked to be suspicious. I'm asked to find, and then everybody starts to look suspicious. And then I found myself having a lot of trouble. How would you describe that? Because the audio was so exact. Look, left. This will be on your right. And then I was like, how do I talk about the person by the pool in a meaningful way? In a kind of specific way. But it was funny to have everybody start to look suspicious. The family, the anomaly part, the thing, the family that stays eating in the middle becomes suspicious just because they keep staying there. They're the only one that they get.
And there was a couple of policemen there with a third person who I immediately assumed to be an undercover person. And so I thought, there's something happening here. it was somehow that they acted as a sort of generator for my suspicion. So I was sort of looking, I started to sort of try and kind of triangulate other people against the position of the cops and the spy. There was something quite strange about that. They intensified the atmosphere.
Did you catch anything?
No, I think they were just having a chat. They had their hands. Probably. I think they were just bored cops. But I did notice, having also been invited to look at the security cameras, start to notice how many policemen are in that station. I thought, this is extraordinary. I bet there's actually hardly any crime that goes on here anyway, just because it's somewhere, pickpocketing and things aside. But just because it's a place of transit, people are not staying there for very long. And actually, you don't see that many police on the street. elsewhere in London, certainly comparatively, certainly not in the sort of residential bit of the city where I live, and yet something, there's something about the sort of performance of security going on that includes the cameras. I mean, Hillary and I were talking about this a bit yesterday. Mm. I'm just wondering, who the hell is watching all this stuff?
Mm. Yeah.
And if it's a robot, who's telling the robot what to watch? You know, it's amazing.
Mm. Yes, are the cameras on, actually?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, most research is that people don't know how to read security cameras. People even charged with reading them don't really know how they
really?
Don't work, because in the sense there's no... They're not readable in many meaningful ways. And very often, yes, there's some... They're not...
Technical
working.
Problem.
Yeah.
But it did make me think about the sort of the performance of security, like airport, security as well. Especially to do with actually making you safe. It's more about making you feel that something's being done.
That somebody
cares. I mean, I'm sure there probably is this is where it has intervened, but actually, generally speaking,
I wonder what is the. I think in European railway stations, I've been much, much more struck, even in Paris and Montpellier, that's where you arrive, and there's people with machine guns, you know, there are wars, people with machine guns. And some for the first time. So I wondered what people in. It seems like we're not. I crossed through there a lot, and I was surprised to see how many police there were. But at the same time, I thought they were almost like bobbies, like our old word for, you know, the police. Well, except they're not. I wondered if people who are in other European stations thought there were many or few, or they didn't think about the absence of the gun, which for me certainly is a marker of a certain kind of seriousness or the first moment when you see it, someone.
Well, they are the army in the gun, you're not. That's the army, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. For me, and they have the boots. So they're much more. Kind of,
there is now a similar unit on being operated by the Transport Police in various stations, but it's an armed unit which isn't dedicated to any particular station. It's a roving unit. So in 1 week they may be at Euston and they may be at King's Cross. So it depends on when you pass through the station. So had we done this last Wednesday, you would have seen the armed officers. Yesterday, the policing effort appeared to me to be a training exercise.
Wow.
So the individuals who are wearing that particular Sally uniform aren't in that station day in, day out. The people who wear the high-vis jackets, they're apparently called high-vis police. maybe two or three officers, and a couple of community support officers. And it's interesting for me to try and distinguish between... I know I've done work on police and security. So to try and distinguish between different forms, different styles of police officers, and also curious distinction between a police community support officer and a police officer. To members of the public, both wear very, very similar styles of outfits. When they were introduced, they didn't. Now they do. They didn't wear similar styles of uniforms, so you could distinguish between the two, whereas now they do. And there's a blurring of the boundary between what a community support officer can and can't do, what a police officer can and can't do.
And what about the transport, this mobile force? Do they have it written? It's armed.
They're armed.
Yeah. So does it have written on?
An armed police.
An armed police. Does it have written on, you know, special?
No, I think on the back it just says
transport police.
But they wear a very. As with the I think in the Garden Order, actually the army. They wear a more military style.
Right.
So it's all very dramatic.
Right.
I have a question for all you other guys. We're surprised that you're surprised about all the apparatus in the railway stations. But for us, we know that. We know that in England, you have a lot of cameras.
Mm.
And why are you surprised?
I think because if you don't look, if you don't look, yeah. I was flabbergasted at the barrister to the barrister, not a barrister, the barrier in the national station in St Pancras. When I looked at that roof, it was like looking at stalactites or something. I mean, there were 23 cameras there in a space of about 8 foot by 25 foot. There were 23 cameras there. And when you're going to a barrier, you're heading to the barrier, you don't want to fall over it, you want to find the little hole where your ticket goes, so you're looking like that. And you might be looking sideways at a sign. You might look up at a panel, but if you look up at a panel, it's like if I look at that light, then my peripheral vision, I'm not looking at the cornice, I'm looking at the light. So if you don't actually look, which that the radio forces to have a much higher level of attention, you just don't see the cameras.
But I mean, it's been said that London is one of the most surveyed cities in the world. And on top of that as well, like the kinds of surveillance mechanisms and security mechanisms that were brought in under the guise of the Olympics. For instance, in Soho, they put up listening posts with microphones so that if they heard particular trigger words, zoom a camera into who was speaking. And there was so much stuff documented about the levels of surveillance in that go well beyond the visual. So I mean, it is actually not surprising.
Well, because I don't live in a metropolitan city, so I mean, we have surveillance cameras on traffic lights, and I mean, that in that station, that is astonishing.
Do you know that?
Do I know?
I mean, there's an obligation to say CCTV is in operation here.
Well, fortunately, after this segment, I'm going to be walking around like this all the time, bumping into people.
But I think it's an interesting point about the atmosphere that it creates. Mm-hmm. That actually, part because it's presented as security, not only security against something happening, but security for you.
I
remember being locked in the British Library on the day of the July bombings, and it was really frightening. And so I guess that, you know, part of the security apparatus is saying that we're going to make sure this isn't going to happen again, and so one can feel reassured and go about your daily business that, you know, these benign robots are watching over your movements. But actually, there's a kind of somnambulism that comes with that. It allows you to disengage from an active, careful sort of encounter with what's going on. Somebody else is doing the watching. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I think that's for me is the most important thing. That it stops our it induces this lack of responsibility for ourselves and others in a way. And I think all of those signs, the same thing. You know, where you have to wear these kinds of hard hats. You know, if you look at a building site, you get a whole list of regulations that you have to do. All these signs that you were pointing out on the walk, I think, go to that sense of passivity, inducing passivity, and, you know, that's
infantilizing it.
Yes, exactly.
I just want to remember that one thing I remember Pete saying in New York, in a seminar one afternoon about surveillance and security was that security in a time that meant lack of affect. Sorry. And I think that's an interesting tension, that the lack of affect and yet the need for the kind of blanket affect for the so that, you know, to feel secure would be to not need to have cameras, and yet the presence of the cameras has to induce a kind of heightened affect or a kind of attention to a lack of attention. It's a strange paradox, though.
Yeah.
At the gate, it's a terrifying.
Yes, Mom. For the visit experience, I'm surprised to love to do that. Because I work on the place with the group before, and I don't know if it's interesting for me to follow the voice, because we catch a lot of pictures, we pass a long time to observe all the rail stations. So, but I'm very interested by the sound visits, and I ask at myself why it's interesting after I make this kind of survey to have this kind of visits. And I think it's one of my interrogation is the voice describe only the things is visible.
or you can read, you can hear, or you can see, or maybe you can touch. So it's like the surface of the atmosphere. Okay, when I understand surface, I understand the air, the sound, but all the things you access by your sensory reality. But in the talk, we haven't other kind of information. For example, this camera, the model is BB94. They can catch you at 36 degrees. And in another room, you have three people. They never watch the TV, but they do the same. For example, we can imagine that we have just a point of interest, and after, a story like the survey we do before. Or, you know, this guy at this shop, okay, this is his story. And you know his life because you listen and you pass on. So, I think it's interesting because to don't have that, because it's like you have clues
yes,
in the space, and how you just try by yourself to observe, how you can contribute as the observation when they say, okay, now you stop and you observe and you not. We do the same things, and we contribute at the voice possibility. We can imagine the next time our observation interrupt the voice and so on. So I think it's a theoretical question for ambiances. Is ambiances you can catch just by this kind of information, and to pass to a clue, to another clue, to you create a story, and we have different stories, of course, and or we need to enter with more information, sociological information, technological information, building information, to understand atmospheres. I'm not sure. I think it's experience to test that, and to make no separation with three things: observation, walking, and contribute at the observation. And I think it's an interesting way to do that. So it's a theoretical question for us, for this research, to know what the micro history by Carlo Ginzburg is an interesting approach for atmosphere. Maybe not for history, but maybe for atmosphere, because I know a lot of critique about this approach by the historian people. But maybe for atmosphere, it's interesting to catch clues, and clues we have different perception, interaction, modification, things like that. So this is my first question. So the clue is like a line. You make a line on a space by that. And the other way for our research, I think about critique. It's not a direct critique about, for example, video surveillance and other kind of this question. But they say with the idea is by Serge Danet, a French movie critic. And when he make a critique about a movie, he does make a text like cultural studies or like it. I like, I dislike, so why? No, he takes the movie with him, with his arm, like a friend, to put a social question. And I think it's interesting for us to don't attack directly, yeah, so the situation or the national video surveillance by the field, the land, the situation, but just to accept, to take the situation with us, like a friend, to put a question. And I think it's different way to arrive at the question of the of course, the notion of atmosphere or ambiances, it's a good, I'm sure, it's a very good tool to make a critique of situations. I'm sure about that. And when we we miss this kind of text. But maybe we can do on the same time the inverse. Not exactly the inverse, but another way, the third way. And I have other things for after. Sorry for my
English. I really appreciate that final one in particular. I think there's something really interesting in that, because I think that atmospheres are something, they're very rarely the sort of the centre of our attention. You're not very often kind of fully concentrating on an atmosphere. You become aware of it at the fringes somehow of your consciousness. It's something that's more peripheral in the sense of vision. So I think Derek was talking about distraction earlier on, but there's maybe something in that about maybe a sort of critical approach that's trying to attend to atmospheres sort of more on the basis of distraction than attention. And I think something of that is operating in those kind of sound walks. What's interesting about them is that you find yourself paying attention to the things that are normally only at the edges of your attention, and there's a relief or an excitement or something in actually finding those things out, even if they're a bit scary. Like I think I noticed, I didn't realise it was still there, but in the Whitechapel Gallery, just after it opened, it used to be a library, that building, and just after it opened, the Canadian artist Janet Cardiff made a sound walk called The Missing Voice. It's been written about a lot, but it's a sort of detective story that takes you through the East End, and you find out some history, but you're not sure whether it's real history or it's invented. It's a really beautiful piece. And I think you can still do it there, although a lot of the architect has changed. But it just made me think about that you find yourself looking at the urban environment in a way that you probably wouldn't normally, just as you said, because your gaze is suddenly directed upwards or sideways, whereas actually you're crossing the road or avoiding other pedestrians, and it's that sort of distractedness that's quite interesting about it.
No, it's really interesting.
To bring it back to Gagnon's question at the beginning about how you exhibit, because what we're talking about is the experience of often. But what struck me was how the very things we've been talking about, how different directors that would have been had we been asked to film it. We were given sound recorder, we were given recording devices on which we were listening to a recording. We weren't being asked to record through that device, we were being asked to take notes. So in the end, you get a sort of document, but it's a different document from the one it would have been had we been either allowed to choose or us to record in a different way. And I just wonder what you think about that, what we think about the usefulness of, because I say the camera is so often used as a way of capturing, of exhibiting, representing on a screen of some sort, is that of, but how do we get away from that as a notion of representing or representation? In fact, but it's a bit what Jean-Paul was saying before about the expression, different expression and representation. So the exhibiting of it, is it an expression of it, or does it have to involve some element of representation, or is it a sort of experiential thing, like to listen to the, you know, you're exhibited by kind of listening, by that process of interacting with a recording of it? So I wonder what the kind of note of the document is, or what stage is it, yeah.
I don't know if I can answer really to this question, but from the idea of exhibiting, we moved away, finally, because we didn't exhibit something. Mm. But we can maybe think of this tape as a way of translating what we had in mind while looking at this station, and also asking people to play a role, or to interpret something, or to be put in a mood. I'm a bit surprised to... I think we didn't pronounce the term mood during the 3 days. And we spoke about feeling, about emotions,
atmosphere.
We know that atmosphere is in between, and we spoke about affect, and it's in between the sensory qualities and also something within yourself. The idea was, finally, maybe not to exhibit something about this ambience of security, because we don't know what is this ambience of security, but to place somebody in the situation of being watched, and to watch also, and to obey orders, so that you can maybe interpret something of
and play also a role related to this question of security and of ambience. I don't know if that answered.
Well, I'm just thinking about the which I thought were very helpful, the language translation techniques. Sorry, I'll let someone else speak.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's just to go back to what you just said, Mika, before. I was wondering if, okay, we spoke about a way to exhibit our research, our field work, etc., etc. I don't know if we are... I think we are always going from the an experimentation, collective experiment, to the question of the representation. And I don't know if we're having our kind of in between. And I was thinking that maybe what starts to raise now, it's maybe that we start with a proposal that it's a common experience. Mm. And with what Nicolas was saying, I was thinking, it can build up by the contributive approach. Like, okay, we have a little experiment, and then we can kind of maybe start to create a bigger description made by multiple layers through repetition of an experimentation, but maybe there is a mutation at the same time, because people that are experimenting the first way.
Core
network,
then can contribute to the description of an ambience. And I was thinking, this might be interesting to create a collective description that is more and more grown, more and more. And that, in this sense, I think what can be also interesting is that maybe it can reveal some paradox in this construction, and maybe, and so, like, through paradox, we might. Also see how personal and individual the experience of the place is, and so I don't know if it's an experiment or an exhibition of, or a presentation, but might be a way to think about this thing.
One of the things that I was thinking of a little bit is the work of Christina Kubic. She's a sound artist that works with electromagnetic fields, and she, with people that build these kinds of devices, built these devices that basically you put them on and you walk around and you can hear the electromagnetic kind of resonance of particular kinds of electronic components. So she does a lot of, I guess, sound walks where they walk past security gates and, you know, automatic teller machines. Basically everything kind of vibrates in this sort of way. And the whole point of her practice is to kind of make visible or to reveal that which is hidden, but is all around us constantly, obviously, these kinds of electromagnetic fields. And one thing that I found really interesting is that it's not, she really foregrounds the technology in this as well as this kind of translation device. And so for me, it kind of sits between this idea of experimentation and representation, because the technology itself is kind of foregrounded as this device that doesn't really represent, but kind of helps to reveal, but is so present in itself, you know, that process of revelation. So, I mean, maybe that's, you know, those kinds of experiments within sound art and sound fields might be some way to kind of think about that as well.
I think to continue the law of comments, I remember you when you try to make this experience, you don't know, you have hesitation about, do we ask at people to make extraordinary things? And this visit, not. We stay with very ordinary things. Just turn left, turn, stay, observe, not, or just look at your head. I think it's very interesting because the relation between ordinary and extraordinary is inside our own action. Is not exterior action. I think it's very more interesting that another kind of way, for example, run or do things, extraordinary things. I'm very happy we don't do that. No, because I remember different texts, Jean-Paul make a translation on a book by Arbel Sachs. He said, how it's difficult to be ordinary in life. And I think we that's our own action. How we ordinary when we have this sound, it's like a paradox. But at the same time, we totally do ordinary things, but with another attention.
No.
And I think it's a way to organize that this kind of visit. And I remember the classic text by Louis Marin, a French aesthetic philosopher or crazy. He said, it's two ways to understand what is a place. It's to tell this place, make a story, tell a story. Another thing is take people by arms and go with me, I show you. Mm-hmm. It's this two, and this kind of visit, you articulate the two ways, but with the contribution, we have a third ways. Of course, so it could be maybe a posture for ours.
Well, I think what you say is directly related to this question of attunement I was bringing earlier.
Yeah.
Because I gave this enormous example of asking people to climb the escalators reverse way. It's exactly doing something extraordinary that makes no sense. I'm not sure we had this idea clearly in mind of making things, making doing being ordinary. But at the same time, it creates some kind of disattunement precisely because this is what you normally look at. But at the same time, it's not very strange to look at this. So,
of course.
When you say disattunement, one thinks of the Russian critic Viktor Kieślowski's term ostranyanie, making strange. But the making strange in the avant-garde, of course, was the big making strange. And what is kind of being talked about with distraction is these little making strangers. Mm. And they would need another different kind of exhibition, another sort of tone.
Seems to kind of resound, if I can say that, a little bit with a sort of Freudian uncanny.
Oh, wow. As
well.
Indeed, unheimlich, yeah, indeed.
You know, something that is not frightening, but it's.
No, it's just sort of shifting.
Shifting.
Mm. Okay. No,
I think we do shift in the sense of. Our attention becomes intention. There's a shift there too.
Mm. Oh yeah. Well, that's a bit like contribution as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like the Perec's injunction: just learn to see more flatly. Mm.
Yeah. You say Perec?
Yeah.
I was just thinking of Perec actually. Yeah.
Who said it? George
Perec.
Scan. This is where you're scanning. Or is it? I suppose that's what I was trying to say earlier, the reversing, or was it solid melted air in terms of sort of kind of negative spaces, making solid, which is a negative, or making a negative, positive. Which is, I was thinking of some discussions we had at the university a long time ago about the work of Cézanne. From the action of looking, making concrete, like the avant-garde of Gertrude Stein making portraits, where she's kind of making the act of looking concrete by building the space. A photographic negative in which you kind of reverse the solid dense or the gap dense and solid making.
Did hear you just said Cézanne?
Mm.
Well, if you Cézanne at the end of his life in one of his letters said to a friend, "I'm still not happy with le sentiment of what's in front of me." When you look at those late works of the Mont Saint-Victoire, the valley, the house, and they're just on this cusp of turning in a frontality instead of illusionistic depth. They're in this extraordinary new visual place. It's a new visual place.
Yeah.
That is sort of an interesting analogy between what's, whatever it is, let's imagine.
Le sentiment is interesting with translate, or sensible as well.
Yeah.
Which in English would return us very much to the 18th century.
I was in the sense and sensibility, yes, yeah.
But I think that there's something really intriguing about that, that actually the theory of sensibility, which kind of characterises so much, I think Richard Sennett's The Decline of Public Man, talks about this, that actually sensibility is a... I was thinking about this earlier, that actually emotion is a really bad word to introduce in these kind of discussions, because it reduces everything towards individual experience, really, and to a very internalised experience at some level as well, whereas actually when we're talking about sentiment or sensibility, we're talking about something that's firstly an external character of things, but then also something that is already more atmospheric, that's kind of picked up as a current in the air, and has a more collective possibility for experience as well. So I don't know again if I'm worried or not about it's quite interesting, I think.
Can I just pick up on a point, following on from what Anya said about this artist? Is translation as a term, I was thinking of transduction, the bodies as transducers, so far as they convert energy from one form into another, and it's the kind of process of conversion. And I guess that's what, I was not a transducer at that gallery, I have to say. Jared Byrne, I didn't have the capacity to... convert any kind of energy. And I just wondered about that sense of bodies as kind of these resistors. And I don't want to take this analogy too far, but sometimes it doesn't work. And how do you sort of think about the capacities of bodies not to be affected as well?
I think it's about transference. Successful or not, or counter transference as sort of separability. Shifting of weight.
I think this idea of transduction is interesting because we, in the work we are doing with Rachel and Gabriel and Aurore, we are working about pacification and. There is something we have seen that in some places, and I think you can see it in many places that are also working and touristic places, when there is a kind of the way people are walking in the public space. When they are tourists, they walk slowly, watching around, and some workers are going through tourists in a most fast and focused way. And depending on something, I don't know what, there is a kind of, maybe, I don't know if it's resonance of, or transduction, or I don't know, that suddenly workers are going slowly,
slowing down.
Or, in the contrary, tourists are going, speeding, and but it's not only the speed; it's the energy. When you talk with people, they often are talking about these towns that are very interesting in the touristic point of view because they are very alive. Because when you are a tourist, you like to feel this energy and to be, in resonance or in transduction of the energy of the one who are living there and making their lives there. And it's very different when you're a tourist in a place which is full of tourists. You don't feel this pulse through you yourself.
You notice this on the tube. If you go to the mainline stations, that, as you know now, surely everybody stands on the right. The tourists make a mistake.
Yeah.
And I talk about this to students regularly. in terms of tourism, but actually there's something very satisfying about beginning to identify oneself as a right.
Yes,
you, because you're in the flow. And I think, but it's not just that recognition. I think you're absolutely right. It's that sense of being in the right sort of flow state.
Yes.
The movement that is also kind of part of what's satisfying you, like a secret tourist somehow. Yeah.
The rhythm. I think there's a bit of a hierarchy as well on escalators because of the left. You have to be very quick if you're left, so you have a purpose. So, you know, it's your special.
Historic with the move, like with the to and fro, but the stopping and the move, stop, go.
Yes,
you're standing, standing still and moving is the wonder of the escalator. But the other thing, you have to be moving while you're moving.
Yeah.
And, keep thinking about this circulation, circulating energy, but also think about I keep going back to the passage, which is not just when you're in the arcade, but passing on the passage, and also the
Okay, so. Well, thank you everybody for this discussion. I don't know really where it's going to bring us.
Great.
But the sure thing is by June 2014 we're going to exhibit, translate, experiment, install, represent, interpret, I don't know, something about ambiances, about critique maybe, about urban places within different countries, Brazil, Venezuela, Spain, Britain, France. So thank you again for giving us all these ideas of we are going, I'm sure, to use in order to prepare something, and we will let you know, definitely.
Thank you for sharing your work.
And all the and thank you for having all accepted to have been recorded. And thank you for I don't have all the records, but it's an error. But everything will be put online very soon on the Ambiences network website. Thanks again.
Is that the best place to find information on the network, on the Ambiences website?
About this research, you mean?
Yes. Or in general, yes, about this. Croissant as well.
And I think there are some sandwiches at the back if people want to have a bite to eat before we go.
I think
they're
there.
Thank you to the organizers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ça fait du bien, hein, la fin, la logistique, la vie de temps.